Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today, gardening with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. Good morning, Roberta.
Good morning.
Hey, dry, dry, dry. I said at the beginning, I'm not going to water this year.
Good luck with that.
I'd have a brown garden if I didn't water a little bit. It's been really dry.
Well, we are, according to State Office of, they watch the water across the state, and we're in sort of a moderate drought in this particular region. I'm sort of a weather nerd, and I'm always watching the radar when they say thunderstorms, and they seem to die out at the canal, and we're not getting anything. And it's been that way since early June, so we are really at a deficit for water right now. And if your town has not imposed restrictions, I would be watering on a very regular schedule and not just, 15 minutes here and there. You really need to give your gardens good, deep soakings. If your town has imposed water restrictions, certainly you need to abide by those, but definitely familiarize yourself with what they are. And when you're allowed to, give your gardens good, deep waterings.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about best water practices. We need about an inch a week, right, for the gardens?
That's sort of the rule of thumb. But when we've been dry this long, when you do water, you actually need to give it a little bit more, in my opinion. What I'm finding is I'm watering in certain areas, and I water for an hour and a half. That's sort of my standard practice. Within a day, that soil is also dry. And I've got a lot of organic matter in my soil, so it's a little concerning. What I would advise people to do is invest in inexpensive mechanical timers that you can put on your faucet. And what this does, it allows you to set your timer for however long it takes to give you the adequate amount of water. And you don't have to worry about going outside, shutting it off. And this all allows you to set it, if you are on water restrictions, most limit the time of day when you can water for after a certain hour in the evening or before a certain hour in the morning. And so this allows you, particularly if you get one of the digital ones, slightly a little more expensive, but you can set it so that you're watering during the night when you're allowed to, and you can set it to water for as long as you need to put down an inch of water.
Yeah, and this happens a lot of summers, and a lot of folks are thinking ahead of, okay, what are some drought-resistant plants which we can think about? And also rain barrels. A lot of people investing in rain barrels, although we haven't had a lot of rain to fill those barrels.
There is that. I have a dehumidifier in the basement. I think everybody on Cape Cod probably does. And I have to empty it twice a day. And I take it outside and I use it to water my container plants with.
What a good idea. Yeah, that's a great idea. The other thing, we're seeing lots of bugs, bunnies, and chipmunks.
Well, and don't forget rats.
Right. Oh, yes.
I picked my very first ripe regular tomato slicer the other day. Absolutely beautiful and extremely tasty, I might say. I have been picking cherries for about a week. Not a lot, but they're coming. But the day after I picked that beautiful ripe tomato, the tomato that was right next to it on the vine was eaten, and judging from the size of the bite marks and how much of the tomato was eaten, it was a rat. So it's like, no, I fenced my garden against the bunnies, but the rats and the chipmunks can go right over.
And this is something we have a problem with as well, is, and we have taken out, the food sources, but we have neighbors who feed the birds. So the rats are there, and then I think they just like to hang out in our yard, and it drives me crazy. And it's a really tough thing to do, because if your neighbors aren't, getting rid of the food sources, you're likely to have the rats as well.
Oh, absolutely. I love my birds, but I stopped feeding them in April. And I don't put up the feeders again till November. However, I have neighbors that have chickens. And of course, if you have chickens, there's chicken feed, and rats absolutely love that. So it's they've become part of our environment here on the Cape. We never used to think about them, but for the past 5 years, we've just seen tremendous numbers of rats all across the Cape. And, you know, if you see them, you know, when someone says, oh, you've got a rat, we think of these sort of dirty, ugly, brown things that are lurking in alleys and garbage cans in cities. The Cape Cod rats are actually kind of handsome. You know, they look like a giant deer mouse or a deer mouse on steroids. You know, they're a lovely gray color with a little white chest, but they are rats.
And they are very smart, and can get into very tiny spaces. And so I've been thinking about this rat problem and how we can solve it. And the only thing I can come up with, and I don't know if this is going to work, but I got some of the... you know, the wire fencing that they can't get through. And I'm thinking of going under, we put up a new fence, going under the bottom of the fence down into the ground, all around, except for the gates. You can't do anything for the gates. But I thought maybe that would at least cut it down. That's going to be probably a project that'll take us into next spring before we complete that.
Yes.
But that's about the only thing I can think of that will keep them out of the yard.
But the only thing that contradicts that is they climb.
That's true.
Bunnies. I've solved my bunny problem at least in the vegetable garden by enclosing each bed with plastic fencing that the bunnies can't get over, but the rats clearly can climb over it, and so can the chipmunks. In the rest of my yard, I don't have a problem with rats. They don't seem to bother any of my perennials or ornamentals. However, this year I have very few lilies because the rabbits ate them down to nubbins in the spring, and they didn't come back. And they also ate a lot of my hosta. So it's one of the prices we pay for trying to coexist with wildlife.
Right. And, you know, it's so funny. Many years you've heard me say, oh, the bunnies are fine. They just eat the clover. And that's been true for the most part. Although I will say early on, there was a bunny and this bunny's friends who were eating some of the hosta as it came up. And it was interesting. I saw this one bunny in that area. And the next day, the bunny had two friends with him. And I was like, what are you doing? And so lately, I've been seeing one bunny in particular every afternoon who's just chomping away on the clover. And I'm like, great. Fine, but I did find two lilies that had been like stripped down, so I'm sure that little bunny took a break from the clover. But I have to say, knock on wood, most of my lilies look great, and I haven't had the bunnies seem to be happy with the clover for the most part. Anyway, this is the first year I've seen them move into anything else besides the clover. And there's
many times I see them and they're simply grazing on the lawn and on the clover in the lawn. But this year I'm growing a couple of different varieties of peppers in containers, which is outside the fenced bed, and they have gotten to those. So, you know, it's, as I said, one of the prices we pay.
866-999-4626 is our number for your garden questions or suggestions. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Seem to be a lot of chipmunks. I've only seen a couple chipmunks in my yard, but I see on some of the social media sites a lot of people complaining about the number of chipmunks this year.
I seem to have my usual one that lives in my wood pile. I know it's around. As soon as my first cherry tomatoes, which was a yellow pear, started to turn color 2 weeks ago, it got eaten. They particularly seemed to, I find the chipmunks like the cherry tomatoes. The rats go for the big slicers. So they are definitely around, although I haven't seen a lot in my yard. So, but I have seen a lot of complaints on Facebook.
About them. And, you know, it's interesting, too, you know, the different gardening sites that have shown up on Facebook, and to see how many people are posting shots of different insects and, you know, other things saying, what is this, friend or foe? And I'm thinking that maybe we're seeing so much of that because so many of us are home now. We have more time to be out in the garden looking around at what's there, right? And it's been interesting to see all the different types of insects that people are discovering.
Well, it's been a very interesting year. I'm not working at the Garden Center at this time. I only work till the end of June. But I have to say that in my 9 years of working in a garden center, I have never seen people interested in buying plants for the garden. People who have never gardened before in their lives were in the garden center looking for not just vegetables and herbs, but annuals and perennials. We could not keep particular plants on the shelf. We'd get a delivery in the morning, and by the following day, someone would come in to get it, and it was gone. So there's a huge interest in gardening this year, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah, it's great.
And a lot of it is we're all kind of staying home. Mm-hmm. I mean, even though things are starting to open up, I'm not going anywhere other than the grocery store and the landfill and recycling center. So
yeah, and I think you know, that's part of the reason I thought, you know what, I've been worried about the water bill, but I thought, you know, this is really our entertainment for the summer. Right, is the backyard. So I guess a high water bill is worth it in the long run for that. And what's interesting is I have lived in this house for 23 years, and this weekend is the first time I've ever been stung by a bee.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was not the bee's fault. I was barefoot and pulling some weeds, and I must have just hit it, like, with the back of my heel. And, you know, I survived, but that poor little bee, you know. Probably.
Right. Bees lose their stinger when they sting you. And, of course, that is a fatal mistake. Yeah. Were you near clover?
I was. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. I was standing in clover. Yep.
Yeah. I've given up going barefoot because I do have clover in my yard, and I have gotten stung in the foot before. So I don't go barefoot, and I try to keep my eyes open because I don't want to inadvertently step on a bee. There's a lot of them around. I'm not seeing a huge number of wasps yet, but we tend to see those a little bit later in the growing season.
A lot of people, I think, get a little nervous about, you know, especially beginner gardeners are like, oh my gosh, there's the bees and the wasps. But I find that if you just kind of do your thing in your space, they'll fly around you. And like I said, 23 years, I've never, while I'm weeding in the garden, I've never been stung.
Yeah.
Hopefully that will continue. But I think if you just kind of, I keep telling my grandson that, just let them be, don't swing at them, just let them be and they'll let you be.
Honeybees, most bees, bumblebees, honeybees, the solitary bees, are pretty much non-aggressive species. They don't look to they're not like yellow jackets.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I work with flowering plants all the time, weeding around them, you know, harvesting. And you basically, if you're moving slow and not aggressively and you don't, you know, actually bump into them, you don't get stung. They're not looking to harm you. So we need our bees. We need them for pollination. So it's just, they're not going to hurt you.
Yeah. All right, let's talk to Bill, who's giving us a call from West Yarmouth. Hi, Bill.
Hi. This is a question about cover crops. My grandfather started this garden in 1940, and I've been doing it since about 73, and every year we used to till it. But a few years ago, we started going to untilled and now planting cover crops. So my question is, what would be a good cover crop starting when our plants, you know, are in September, we start putting in late August? I've tried haricot veg in the past, and that is, it's a little bit intrusive. It kind of grows all over the place. And a person recommended crimson clover. And so I have some, but I'm concerned now that you say, I don't want to plant all this nice crimson clover if I'm just going to be attracting all the bunnies in West Germany.
Yeah, crimson clover does better if it's sown in the early spring. And you can till it under, you know, sometime in late May, early June for a cover crop. What was the one you mentioned? Was it buckwheat?
Haricot vetch.
Oh, yes. You know, I used to use down at the fairgrounds just buckwheat, and it's an annual. It grows pretty quickly and adds a lot of organic material to your soil when you do turn it under. It also is really great at choking out weeds. So I like buckwheat.
I know I'm no longer turning the soil under. It's untilled, so I just kind of poke holes where I plant.
You can do that with buckwheat. It's annual. It will die back.
You can do that with buckwheat. It's not that obtrusive. So.
No, it's not.
Right. It won't.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, Bill, good luck
with
that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. More after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. It is Gardening with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. If you have comments, questions, or suggestions for us, 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We have an email from Cindy in West Falmouth who says, despite removing the lower leaves on my tomatoes, I think I have early blight on the leaves, and I'm wondering if there is anything I could spray on them, or is it too late?
Well, early blight is a very common fungal problem on tomatoes. There really are not a lot of varieties that have resistance to early blight. I do remove the lower leaves to allow air circulation, but at some point in the season, like right about now, I'm starting to see signs of it on the lower leaves of mine as well. So I'm also pruning those off. If you want, you can use a fungicide, either a biological or a chemical. However, you have to keep in mind that fungicides, both biological and chemical, are preventative in nature. So they will not cure an existing infection, but they might prevent its spreading. Early blight is not one of the vascular wilts. Once a plant has a vascular wilt, there's nothing you can do. But it is spread by spores that splash from a lesion or from the soil. So if you protect uninfected foliage with a fungicide, that would help to prevent it from spreading throughout the plant. The key to using fungicides properly, both the biological and the chemical, is to, first of all, read the label and mix it up according to the label directions, and it needs to be repeated on a regular basis. So if you read the label, it will say reapply every 7 to 10 days or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. So you can prevent it from spreading further, but you have to be diligent about using it properly.
Right. Lawrence is giving us a call from Provincetown. Hi, Lawrence.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
My question is regarding the rats. Last year, they took a toll on my tomatoes, and I didn't know what it was that was eating them. I thought it was the chipmunks, and then, of course, realized that later on in the season that it was actually rats.
Yeah.
I heard that soaked cotton batten in peppermint deters them, and I was just curious if that's true.
Well, there is some belief that peppermint repels rodents. You can actually buy commercial preparations of little packets of peppermint and peppermint oil that are used indoors to deter mice. So there may be some truth that it would also work against the rats. I just have a real problem with rats and have not yet myself found a good solution for them. Last year, they got almost all of my tomatoes, which was very disappointing. This year, I'm hoping that there'll be some deterrence with the fencing I put up, but they can go over it, as evidenced by the half-eaten tomato I found the other day. But give it a try and let us know if you have any success with it.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Lawrence. If you try that, we would love to know if it works. I think we don't have any rain right now, but I would think once it rains and gets rid of that smell, you'd have to keep replacing it.
Right.
Yeah. Anybody who has any ideas on how to get rid of the rats, we want to hear about it.
Does mothballs do any good?
No, and you wouldn't want to put mothballs in your garden. The chemicals in that would not be good.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't want to get that. We don't want to put toxins in the ground if we don't have to.
Right.
Lawrence, yeah. Thank you so much for the phone call, and let us know how it goes.
Well, thank you.
You bet. Catherine sent us an email, and I'm going to ruin the name of this plant. The previous owner planted, is it Pieris japonicus?
Pieris japonicus.
Okay, I was close. Along the driveway. They've gotten very tall and need a lot of trimming. Can I cut them down low and move them? The bottoms of the shrubs are very thick and woody. I would like to put them in the wooded lot if they can be moved. When would I do that?
Well, I would probably do it in very early September. It's right now, it's too hot and too dry to really successfully move a large plant. You can move smaller plants if you pay attention to watering, but a large plant is going to be really, it's going to be set back by being pruned back and transplanted to begin with, and to do it during a very hot, dry time of the year would really limit your success. So I would probably do it sometime in late August, early September. We tend to be a little bit cooler then, and we also usually, I mean, you never know, we return to more regular rainfall by then. And I probably would only trim it back maybe by a third of its growth. Give it a generous root ball, and they actually prefer a partially shaded location. So that would be a benefit.
Right. Catherine also says, I sowed foxglove seeds, and because they are such tiny seeds, they are crowded. Can I leave them where they are and move them in the spring?
You can leave them where they are and move them again in the fall, when it's cooler and moister, or you can wait to thin them out next spring, either.
We're talking with Roberta Clark. If you have gardening questions, comments, or stories, suggestions, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. I've seen this plant before, but it hasn't struck me as much as it has recently, and that is the Crocasmia?
Crocasmia, yes.
Yeah, the beautiful red. I've been looking around and seeing them in other people's gardens, and I was like, I love this plant. I went and bought three of them over the weekend and planted them. They are just absolutely gorgeous.
They're stunning. Did you get the cultivar Lucifer?
I did,
yes. It's a bright scarlet, and hummingbirds absolutely love it. They are, I want to say they're sort of borderline hardy. When I had them planted in the perennial border at the fairgrounds, we had them planted near a rock wall, which absorbed and reflected heat, and they did beautifully. When I've planted them out in my perennial border, some years they survive, other years they haven't. So, sometimes I treat them as an annual.
So they like a lot of sun then?
They like full sun and they like warmth.
Oh, good. Okay, well, I put them in the sunniest part of my garden. So,
oh, good. They should do very well.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it's interesting because that's a section of my garden. I had moved a big hydrangea from there, so I had this big area to fill. And I thought I was going to put some dahlias there, but I ended up putting the dahlias in another spot. So I just threw some petunias in there early, and let me tell you, I water those petunias sometimes twice a day, and I did two colors. I did sort of a lavender and then a darker blue. All of the darker blue ones died. Lavender ones are still hanging in there. And I thought maybe it had something to do with the color and they just got hotter or something then. But boy, that in that really full sun, you have to give them a lot of water.
You know, until annuals really develop a good root system, they do require a lot of water to get a good firm, you know, growth going. I can't remember the name of it, but it's a deep velvety purple blue petunia in the ground this morning. Not this morning, but earlier this summer, and they are growing slowly. I'm not sure if I will grow them again next year. They do get watered. but not perhaps as regularly as the perennial. I mean, I'm watering based on the established perennials, not on the annuals that I put, you know, sort of dot in between. So I might have to come up with a different solution for that area.
Yeah, I do have a little another little garden that I usually do annuals and some elephant ears, and I have petunias there as well. The same dark color and another color. They're doing fine. They look great, but they don't get full day sun. So I think that might
be the difference. Yeah, petunias, you know, it's funny. We grow them as full sun plants, but I find they actually do fairly well if they get a little bit of shade from that heat in the afternoon.
I think you're right, yeah. All right, Marianne says, my cucumber tries to make babies behind the blossom, but by the time they're about 3 inches long, they get rotted and withered from the center of the curve. Is there anything I can do? She says, thank you so much for your program. It's a bright spot in the pandemic.
Well, thank you for that. I have to say I'm having a bumper crop of cucumbers this year. In fact, I was expecting my family from Phoenix. They come every summer, and they had a trip planned for early July. And, of course, due to the pandemic, they ended up having to cancel. But I planted my garden thinking I'd have four extra people in the house. So I have lots of cucumbers and squash right now that I'm giving away. It sounds like that might be a water imbalance. You have to think cucumbers are 98% water, and they do not appreciate going dry at all. And what will happen is they'll start to grow normally, and then when they run into a drought situation or an inadequate water situation, they sort of narrow down and begin to shrivel. So that might be the problem. I don't know that it could be inadequate pollination. If the flowers weren't pollinated, you wouldn't get anything. So I think it's more of water relations, and perhaps for cucumbers, you might need to give good deep soakings in this heat and dryness a couple of times a week.
Yeah, I water my cucumber every day. It's in a very hot spot, and I've gotten, I think, three so far, and I can see lots of other little ones.
Yeah, I've got way too many. I've already made refrigerator dills.
Have you? Wow.
Now I need to make, I don't have room in my refrigerator to make any more refrigerator dills, so I need to start actually canning them.
Now, of course, my grandson really wanted to grow pumpkins, and so we planted some pumpkin seeds, and we have this beautiful pumpkin patch, and I'm wondering, should I snip some of them off? Should I let them all grow, or is it best just to have a few?
It's if you want to them to have size, generally you select the few that you would like to grow and you snip the other ones off. But he might not care about size and just find it more exciting to have lots of pumpkins.
Yeah, I think he's into numbers.
Yes, then I would just leave them.
And what about watermelon? We have last year we tried to grow watermelon, and remember last year everything started so late. We got a small one, but it never really got to where it should be. And this year I've planted watermelon again. Again, should we just kind of let one or two go for that?
With a watermelon, I would probably limit the number the vine will support. And that way you'll have a better, tastier watermelon when it's time to harvest.
Great. All right. So Anthony says, there's a hazelnut tree by my office, and all these hazelnuts are sprouting now, and I would love to have some pots with hazelnut trees. Is this a good idea?
Huh. I would have to... Hazelnuts generally are not native plants, so my question would be, was it an edible hazelnut that was planted? I mean, there are ornamental hazelnuts. I have a purple-leafed corollis. It does not bear fruit, so no nuts, but... if he's just interested in if they're seedlings and he's interested in having some, sure, dig up some seedlings and take them home and plant them.
Mm-hmm. And if it happens to be one that you can eat, would you need to put that in the ground at some point, or can you just keep it in a big pot?
You'd need to put it in the ground.
In the ground, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, they're not really container plants.
Yeah, Anthony, thanks for the question. Tara, who's from Sarasota Springs, New York, and East Ham, says she has two questions. I planted a stilbe in early June, mixed in some organic gardening soil for better water retention, thoroughly watered, and then left my seasonal cottage for a few weeks. No timed watering, was thinking the wet conditions at the time might continue, and returned in early July to find parched plants. Will these plants come back next spring? Are they just dormant now, or are they dead?
Without seeing them, I can't pronounce the final rights over them. Stilbes are part-shade plants, and they really don't like dryness. I have several stilbes in my yard, and those that are in the more shaded areas are doing fine. I have a beautiful one, but it gets a lot of sun, and even though that area gets as much water as the rest of the yard, that particular one is very crispy. It survives. It comes back the next year, but I really need to give it a break, dig it up, and move it to a more shaded, moist location. If it's newly planted and it didn't get watered for several weeks, it may not be dead, but you want to pay a lot of attention to it and encourage it to live.
I would say, Tara, you might as well try watering it and just see what happens if it comes back or not. It can't hurt anything.
No.
Her second question is, on my early June return, a glutton for punishment, I planted a few other perennials that hopefully do well in dry and poor soil conditions. Yarrow, anise, hyssop, butterfly weed. How long can these newer plants go without regular watering? I watered daily for the first 10 days and now have been gone for a week plus and am wondering how long they can go.
I would say she was from Truro?
East Ham.
East Ham. Okay, well, a little better soil in East Ham. I would say a week without, is probably you're pushing it. When you're down, before you leave, absolutely soak them to hopefully hold them over till you get back. But much longer than a week without water for a newly planted perennial is tough. They may survive, but they're not going to thrive.
Tara, maybe if you have some young people in your neighborhood, you could pay them to come and water while you're gone. That might help.
Or you could look into a digital, what did I call it?
Timer.
Timer, right. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Senior moment there. Look in, I use the manual ones because I'm here at home, but there are digital timers that you can program. And so she might look into getting a digital timer and have a sprinkler out there in the area where these are newly planted and program it to go off at certain intervals while she's gone.
Yeah. Let's talk to Becky, who's calling from Harwich. Hi, Becky.
Hi, Becky. Hi, good morning. And hi, and I have an invasive plant that I discovered a couple of years ago. When it first comes out of the ground, what I noticed was the leaves, let's say like you notice dandelion leaves, but these were very hairy, long, pointed leaves. So I let it be, curious what it was, and it developed into a very spiny plant that I put my leather gloves on and was able to pull out by the roots, but I quickly discovered as time went by that it was all throughout the yard, and the taller the plant got, the more impossible it was to pull it out because the spines are over, the thorns are over an inch long, and they pierce the leather glove. So it eventually totally choked out a hydrangea, and then this year I discovered one because I guess the wind must carry the seeds that was already about 2.5 feet tall. So I just wondered if you knew what that was.
Does it have a woody stem?
Well, when I've been able to pull it out, because of the thorns, I'm really not looking so much at how the stem looks, but I think it's green.
Yes, but is it firm and woody, or is it herbaceous? Like a perennial plant.
Well, it's strong, put it that way. It stands straight and tall. You know, it's a sturdy stem, I'll put it that way.
Yeah, and the leaves are single, or are they divided in as a compound leaf?
The leaves, I've only really noticed the shape. They are long and pointed and hairy.
And hairy. Huh.
Yeah.
Thorny. That is, I mean, black locust, which is not necessarily hairy, sends out lots of seedlings and has spines. There's another woody plant that can become quite... it forms thickets, colonies called the devil's walking stick. It's actually a native plant that has very, very spiny stems, almost impossible to grasp it even with leather gloves.
Yeah, they are impossible.
Yeah. Could it be thistle?
I know the thistle? Master Gardener office is not open at the moment, but you can mail in samples, and the agent, Russ Norton, should be able to look at it and identify it for you. And once you have an actual identification, then you can come up with a good plan to deal with it. But you would need, I'm only guessing because I can't see it.
Roberta, do you think it could be thistle?
It could be thistle. They generally come in as single plants. They do have very spiny leaves and spiny stems.
These come in as single plants. They do come in as single plants, but they can be all over the yard.
Becky, I would say, you know, what, Google thistle and just see if that's it. And then if that's not, maybe you can send a picture over to the extension office and they might be able to help you. Becky, thank you for the phone call.
I think that's a good idea. You know, Russ should be able to give you some identification and also give you some ideas on how to manage it.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. More after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking gardening with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We've got a little flurry of emails here. Roberta, Carolyn writes, I have bought flats of morning glories twice this season, and I can't get them to grow. The leaves are turning very pale, almost yellow, and they are just barely hanging on. Am I doing something wrong?
I don't grow morning glories because when they do grow well, they drop seed and can become a little weedy at times. If you bought them as a three-pack as a garden center and just popped out one of the cells and planted it, if you looked at it, it probably had multiple plants in that cell. That's the way the growers do it. They put several seeds in each little cell of a six-pack or a three-pack, and so you end up with too many plants. If you just plant that one little cell, you have too many plants in one location. You really need to thin it down to one or two plants at the most. So that's a possibility. If they've been dry, if they're growing in full hot sun and not watered adequately, that could be a possibility. Lack of fertilizer could be another possibility. So you need to look at the growing conditions and perhaps modify what appears to be the problem.
Mm-hmm. And then Chad writes, I have a perennial hibiscus that for the second year is 8 feet tall, growing well, but refuses to bloom. I've tried potash, potassium, other blooming strength fertilizers. Nothing helps. Would greatly appreciate any thoughts.
Well, my first question, but it's an email, so I can't get an answer from him, is it in full sun? The perennial hibiscus are full sun plants, and if they're shaded, they will grow quite well, and obviously it's growing well if it's 8 feet tall, but they don't necessarily bloom. So that could be the problem. Also, if he's using a fertilizer that's too high in nitrogen in spring, that will promote vegetative growth at the expense of blooming. So that's something else to look at.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then Eric in Sandwich says, I have no luck growing Russian sage. It's supposed to do well in sunny locations and marginal soil, but the year after I plant them, they seem to be slow growing and never fully develop like plants I see most everywhere else. I have some in good organic rich soil and others in sandy, well-drained soil, and it doesn't seem to matter.
You know, I sympathize because I, for some reason, I don't seem to be able to grow Russian sage very well either. But yet,
me either.
There is a traffic island along Route 28 in Centerville by Finney's Lane that has Russian sage in it that's doing fantastic. And it's even seeding itself and coming in and looks gorgeous. And I'm going, whoa, is this total neglect or what's going on there? There's no irrigation. But anyway, according to all the books, they like full sun and well-drained soil. I would also suspect they like to be fertilized. Mine does not get fertilized. It grows every year. It blooms every year, but it doesn't look as fantastic as the pictures you see in perennial catalogs.
Yeah, same with me.
So perhaps fertilization would be assistance there.
Yeah. Let's talk to Joan, who's giving us a call from Harwich. Hi, Joan.
Hi there. How are you?
Great.
I have a suggestion for you. I don't know if you've ever heard of soap nuts.
Of what?
Soap nuts.
Soap nuts. No, I don't. You know what, I don't know what those are. What are they?
Well, they're the nuts of the tree that produces saponin. You know when quinoa.
Yes.
You buy it at the store, and then you have to rinse it to get off the soapy flavor that the birds and the bees and things don't like.
Oh, okay.
Or not the bees, but okay. So I had soap nuts are also used for laundry and washing, and they're very economical and organic. And so a friend gave me some, and I was thinking that maybe they are work in the garden against the pests. So 3 years ago, I tried spreading the husks, the shells of the nuts in and around my vegetable and herb garden. And it's like a miracle. When you spray them, they become sudsy. So the ground is kind of soapy, and it deters all insects and slugs and earwigs. And I've had wonderful crops because of that. I can't deter the bunnies. The bunnies I deter by putting strips of bounce dryer sheets on the little hoops that I've got around the garden, and they don't like the scent of bounce.
Wow.
Yeah. Interesting. Wow, I will have to look that one up and see what I can do about it.
Yeah. Joan, thank you for sharing that.
I don't think you'll find any other use for it other than laundry. I think I'm probably the first one that's used it for gardening.
Well, I think that's very interesting.
Yeah. Joan, thank you again for sharing that. Well, we'll have to check that out. Thanks again. Let's talk to Tomar, who's calling from Vineyard Haven. Good morning.
Good morning. I have six huge, gorgeous tomato plants in very large pots on my deck, and they are covered with tomatoes. They have had large tomatoes on them for more than a month, and they don't turn red at all. What's wrong? And also, there's new soil in there, very good soil.
Tomatoes, ripening is a function of temperature. And some tomatoes require a long spell of very warm weather before they ripen adequately. So I think if you've got lots of tomatoes and the plants look healthy and good, you just have to be patient. And they eventually, mine are just starting to ripen, and it's what, almost to the end of July. It's not unheard of for tomatoes to go well into August before they're ready to pick. So I think it's just being patient.
Yeah. Thanks, well, that's good
and bad to hear. I thought maybe with the high heat yesterday that we started getting, they would turn. But maybe I see a little blush of pink on them.
Yeah, I
mean, I went out and examined all mine yesterday, and I've got 29 tomato plants, which is too much. But a lot of them are rock solid green, and others are just starting to show a change in the tone of color with a little blush on them. So I'm thinking I'll probably be inundated with tomatoes in another 2 weeks.
Yeah, so be patient.
Well,
it'll happen. Sure.
Thank you for answering.
Yep. Peter writes, Peter in Eastham says, try using a product like Soil Moist as extra insurance for plants drying out. Thanks for that, Peter. Richard writes, if listeners find they have an overabundance of produce from their vegetable gardens and their neighbors are locking their doors, consider donating the excess to the Falmouth Service Center via the Falmouth Farmers Market. That's a great idea. I'm sure the food
it is.
Would
I think every food pantry would appreciate fresh produce, but not baseball bat zucchinis.
And then Bonnie and Dennis says, can you identify a weed that actually smells like urine when removed? It grows in a tall plant with small buds. If you let it grow by mistake, of course. I have no idea what that is. Do you have any
idea? I have to say, I have no idea what that is either. I have not pulled a weed that smells like urine.
And then we have 8 or 9 turkeys that loll on our lawn for hours at a time and wander through our entire yard. We verbally chase them away, but they return within the hour. They are creating comfortable nesting beds in our mulched areas. Any solutions?
Yeah, unfortunately, I have no solutions to turkeys. You can keep harassing them. As soon as you see them, go out and harass them, and maybe if you're very, very persistent, they will find another place that they enjoy. I knock on wood, so far we only have a small flock in my neighborhood, and they walk through my yard, but they don't hang out, for which I'm very glad.
Yeah,
Just be persistent in chasing them out of that particular area.
Yeah. And then Molly writes, she says, I'll listen again at 7 p.m., but did the caller say soap nuts?
My interpretation was soap nuts.
Yeah.
So I'm going to Google it and see what I can come up with.
Exactly. And then we have another question about joining our Zoom garden tour on July 31st. If you've been curious about our gardens, you know, Roberta and I talk a lot about our gardens. You can get a glimpse of our gardens. We're doing a virtual garden tour and chat on Friday, July 31st at 10 a.m. You do have to register to get the Zoom information. You can find that information at our website, capeandislands.org. I think that's going to be a lot of fun, Roberta.
I think it will be too. Of course, I'm not taking any pictures of the weeds.
Me either. I kind of tried to. I did a little video, and I tried to go a little bit past the weedy areas.
Right.
And we're also going to have some photos of listeners' gardens as well. So if you go, I think there might be information on our website about that if you would like to share something interesting in your garden. So that's coming up Friday, July 31st at noon, our virtual garden tour and chat with Roberta and I.
At 10.
Again, at 10, that's right. I said noon, 10 a.m. You're right, 10 a.m. For an hour. And if you go to capeandislands.org and click on the events tab, that's where you can register for that. Roberta Clark joins us the second Tuesday, third Tuesday. second Tuesday is bird news. Third Tuesday of the month to talk gardening. Roberta, thanks as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
My pleasure.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.